Welcome back to another episode of the Beer Truth Podcast. I'm Tom, and today we're going to talk a little bit about homebrewing. And so many of the interviews I've done on here, probably other interviews you've heard with brewers, other shows, or whatever form of media, you hear a lot of people in the industry got their start in beer by brewing at home, brewing in college, brewing. They got a homebrew kit for a gift or whatever. Most of them generally say it's pretty bad beer to start with, but it piques an interest. It sparks a new hobby, or you know, can even inspire a whole new career, as we see with people who go on to open their own brewery. Some people, like myself, just make bad homebrew that eventually gets dumped down the drain, but it's a fun process, and there's always that hope when you're starting out and making it and waiting on it to ferment that it will turn out good. And I'll let you know when I finally make a good batch of beer, but don't hold your breath. For so many people, from Ken Grossman on down the craft beer hierarchy, homebrewing was where it all started. It's a fun new adventure, but generally that is just the start, and sometimes your great start ends up becoming a brewery, and it's all gravy. Sometimes you just make shit beer and realize it's a long road ahead if you want to make good beer, and practice makes perfect, and it kind of starts down that road. Or it can just be that fun hobby, and the process is maybe more enjoyable than your end product. Maybe you homebrew with a friend, or you know, have another beer while you're making your homebrew, and it's kind of the, you can control how your, what your beer ends up tasting like, what hops go into it, all the different things that you can manipulate, and it's just, you know, it's just a fun weekend project or free time project, and it's not necessarily about putting out the greatest beer, but it's more about the process. So there's different reasons people do it, but no matter what your reason for homebrewing is, it has not always been legal, and it actually wasn't legal during Prohibition. That was one part of Prohibition. Doesn't mean that when it's been illegal that people haven't done it, but homebrewing in a larger sense has been happening for thousands of years, and it's generally regulated by federal and state laws. Federally, it is legal, and there are some restrictions on that, but states have some of their own wacky, weird, outdated laws. Although homebrewing wasn't legal during Prohibition, it wasn't particularly popular before that. There were certainly people who were homebrewing, but beer had fallen out of favor quite a ways before that. It wasn't necessarily the drink of the colonies or anything like that. That was more rum and cider. But America was historically a rum and whiskey country, some cider, and beer was not really the consumer product that it is now, or homebrew product. Beer was not really the product that it is today. So there have certainly been people who enjoyed homebrewing over time and, you know, want to try their own hand at it as opposed to buying it from the brewery. And this was even before mass market beer had become the generally bland, subsidized mass market lager that we associate with big beer. There was still a lot of traditional brewing from Europe, traditional techniques that a lot of things got adapted to the ingredients and temperatures here in the U.S., but there was still traditional brewing. There were traditional beers. There were dark lagers. There were beers with flavor. There was the social scene of the saloon. There was genuine beer gardens. And then Prohibition hit in 1920, and pretty much all that went away in large part. The temperance movement itself was actually having an effect before Prohibition went into effect. Even, I think, 20 years or so before that, Prohibition started having an effect on state laws, and Prohibition pretty much immediately forced almost all breweries to close. The ones that did manage to stay open and even stay open and survive generally did so by selling soda or malt syrup or near beer, which was basically anything below 0.5%, alcohol, and essentially any other products that they could sell and remain in business. I think Anheuser-Busch made a lot of money selling ice, and beer was not legally sustaining any businesses through Prohibition. And so once Prohibition was lifted, there was, you know, the ones that had managed to survive were pretty big companies that were probably equipped going into Prohibition to weather some of the storm. And, you know, they weren't living on the tighter margins that a lot of places that closed were. And after Prohibition, there was a ton of consolidation from those big breweries buying, you know, what was struggling that was still around, which led to beer kind of becoming a pale, bland lager that there just wasn't too many choices to the consumer. And frankly, I'm glad I didn't have to experience American beer culture of the mid-20th century because it was not pretty. So let's fast forward to 1978 and the legalization of homebrew when President Jimmy Carter signed a bill to legalize homebrewing. That was a big thing for the small, very small homebrew community. And the bill actually, I think, went into effect the next year, 1979, but the impact was huge. And I don't think it's too much of a coincidence that Sierra Nevada turned 40 years old in 2019. And I believe I have that number right. And that's 40 years after homebrewing went into effect, and that community really started to, I guess not take off, but really have a presence. There's still, as I mentioned, a bunch of weird, specific, outdated laws, and some that seem like they have no basis in current reality, but that affect homebrewing, like how much you can make, whether or not you can transport it from your friend's house where you made it to where you live, if it's a certain amount of liquid, even where the ingredients have to be from. In the case of Idaho, I think that's still a law that it has to be Idaho product to be able to use it for homebrew. One thing that's common throughout all of it, though, is that you can't sell homebrew. You can't make money off of it. And that's a regulatory thing, probably largely a tax thing as well. But let's back up a bit and talk about what homebrewing even means. Homebrewing is generally assumed to mean the production of beer, cider, or mead at home on a personal scale for non-commercial purposes. Again, you can't sell your homebrew, can't make money on it. And you can argue about whether homebrewing includes mead making or cider making. Since cider is a fruit beverage, it generally falls under wine licenses in the commercial aspect, but it's homebrewing generally means any of those, probably largely meaning beer, but it can include cider and mead as well. Home distilling is a whole different story, and part of that has to do with safety and unscrupulous moonshining practices that people have gotten hurt, people have died. That's kind of a more specific thing with the science of which form of alcohol. But homebrewing is generally not going to result in a dangerous product being created. You might make shitty beer, but you're probably not going to fuck up somebody's vision with your hoppy pilsner that you fermented at 84 degrees in the kitchen window. Home distilling, you can, if you're doing it wrong or changing the end product with altering the end product with other additives, then that's when you can get a little dangerous. So what goes into homebrewing? You're probably going to have a homebrew kit. You can buy a homebrew kit of various different prices, equipment needs, levels of difficulty. But you're probably going to have a homebrew kit, and comes in different forms. You can jump right to all grain, where you're actually using all grain in producing your beer. If it comes in a prepackaged kit, it's probably been milled for you, which takes out one step for you to deal with and save some time, save some more stuff to clean up. A lot of serious homebrewers will actually mill their own grain to get whatever crush they prefer for efficiency for their brew house or personal preference, or maybe they just want to take it a step further under their own control in the process, because that's a big part of homebrewing is being able to control the process and play with different aspects, do what you want to do with it. You can also use a malt extract kit, which is how a lot of old school brewers got their start in homebrewing. Those are fairly common and inexpensive. And again, they take another step out of the process for you. Malt extract is basically a syrup concoction that has been pretty well dehydrated. And you'll mix it with warm water and adding hops if necessary, or before pitching your yeast. I say if necessary for adding the hops because there are also malt extract kits that come pre-hopped. Once again, removing another step for you to deal with at home. Personally, when I homebrew, I use 1 gallon kits from Brooklyn Brew Shop. It's super easy to use. They come in all grain kits, which I prefer. So I feel kind of closer to the hands-on experience, kind of closer to the process being done at a legitimate brewery. And I like to have that experience. I just have a 1 gallon kit. A lot of homebrewers that are brewing on a bigger scale, well, 5 gallon batches are pretty standard. But the 1 gallon kits from Brooklyn Brew Shop are easy to use, easy to clean up, and it's not a big waste when I know that I'm eventually going to dump that beer. So that's my preference. But again, you can find all kinds of, really any option you're looking for, you can find it. So even though I prefer all grain, and it kind of gets more towards the authentic brewing experience, that doesn't mean it's going to be better beer, as I have repeatedly proven to my taste buds. But the process of brewing itself, what does that look like? I'll break it down in simple steps. I'm not a brewer. I'm not going to go into too much detail, whether you find that boring or interesting. I think it's interesting, but again, there's a lot of different ways you can go and different things you can do with it. So if you're still listening, I don't want to lose you at this point. So keep it simple. Step one, you have your grain. You mash in. Basically, you're kind of making oatmeal. And the heat of the water is going to unlock some of the starches and sugars in the grain. And it's going to make this sugary water liquid called wort. And then you're going to sparge with hot water to rinse any more sugars you can off the grain, because you want those sugars, because those are going to be eventually consumed by the yeast. So moving on to step two, you're going to remove the wort from the grain, and you know, you have a designated amount of time for your boil. If you want to get more specific, you can take readings, and when you hit the certain reading, certain gravity you're looking for, then you'll pull off that wort, and when it falls below, then you're going to stop extracting wort, because you need a certain amount of sugar in the water for whatever style you're making. You're probably going to know that ahead of time if you're measuring wort and pH and doing all those things that are a little more in-depth. But so after you sparge, you've got your wort. Your wort is going to be boiled, and that's called the boil. Usually going to be for at least 60 minutes, probably going to top out at 90 if you're doing more than 60. But as with so many things in beer, that can change. That time frame can change pretty drastically based on style and tradition and technique and, you know, what grain bill you're using, what the temperature outside is, all kinds of different things can change that. But during the boil, you're going to add hops on your hop schedule, unless, again, doing something different and you're not doing hops in the boil or very little hops in the boil. But generally, you're going to add hops at the beginning of the boil, and maybe a quarter way in, halfway in, three quarters of the way in, 5 minutes left in the boil. Those are pretty standard hop addition times. If you're doing an hour, it could be 60 minute, 45, 30, 15, 5. The later you add those hops, the less bitterness you're going to get from those hops, and the more flavor and aroma is going to be retained. So that's where you kind of get into adding hops later on in the boil or even after the boil. Go listen to the dry hopping episode, that gets a little more into that. But that's, again, going kind of down that rabbit hole that don't want to get down right now. So after your boil, you can't just pitch yeast into boiling hot wort, or even not boiling, but it has to be generally below a certain temperature, because you're going to kill that yeast if you throw it in too hot. And so if you have a wort chiller or something like that, you can do it fairly efficiently. If you just have a sink and a bunch of ice cubes and some running water, like I generally do, it sucks and takes forever, and it is not good for the finished product. And that's a pretty big, important step to be able to control quickly and without exposing it to a bunch of air, because that's, again, that's not going to be generally good for your final product. But once you got it cool enough, you can pitch your yeast, and it needs to be below that certain temperature. Then your yeast will be able to survive in that environment and start fermenting. The fermentation is actually what turns the sugary wort liquid into beer over time. And primary fermentation usually going to start within a few hours and last a few days, maybe a week. But that is that's when it really starts turning into beer. So once you're done with that, once you're done with primary fermentation, secondary fermentation, you're going to need to package your beer. And generally homebrew is bottled or kegged, and it's not the most glorious process. I kind of fucking hate it, but these days even your homebrew can be canned if you want to put a little more effort and money into the process. But when you're packaging, you have to carbonate, because you haven't been trapping that carbonation in the fermenter while you've been waiting for that fermentation to finish, unless you're an engineer and saving that tiny amount of carbonation. So you got to carbonate your beer. You can do it by adding priming sugar. A lot of people use corn sugar and dissolved into water, and then just doing a little math, you can get the right amount to properly carbonate your beers without creating little bottle bombs in your fridge, because that's never fun. And if they're overcarbonated, that, you know, you're going to ruin the beer as you're trying to drink it. It's not going to be what you want. If you undercarbonate it, then you're just going to have flat beer out of a bottle, and that also sucks. I've done both. I haven't blown up a bottle yet with my homebrew, but who knows? Maybe I just jinxed myself. I don't know. But yeah, waiting for your primary fermentation and then carbonating and then waiting another 2 weeks and then opening that bottle and not hearing that little hiss of carbonation kind of sucks, because then you know that you got flat beer and you didn't do it right. But it's all part of the process. So you can add sugar in whatever form you want to use, but you can also force carbonate a keg, which is just, I mean, literally forcing carbonation into the keg, into the solution. And it takes a little time because of science and the temperature of the beer. Colder the liquid, the more CO2 it can absorb into solution. And that's about as scientific as I can get. I am not a scientist, but I know that. And it doesn't just immediately evolve, or it doesn't just immediately dissolve into solution and create your perfectly carbonated beer. You can use a regulator and a CO2 tank and hook it up and have it set at a certain temperature and wait a certain amount of time. Sometimes it's a couple weeks. And so assuming that all goes to plan, a couple weeks later, you open your beer and it tastes awesome. And that's cool. At least that's the idea. Again, hope you weren't holding your breath waiting for me to make that good beer. But yeah, like I said, there's a lot of science, a lot of calculation that goes into making a great end product. And you know, if it's your dream, then going pro with it. Otherwise, just having a little fun, killing some time on a stovetop or on the burner and making your own homebrew that maybe will be drinkable. But the best way to learn is do it yourself. You don't need much equipment. It's pretty cheap. The only equipment specifically for homebrew I have is a 1 gallon carboy and a thermometer and a tube to transfer from whichever pot to bottle to whichever way I'm transferring beer to different vessels. So It doesn't need much equipment. You can really, I mean, a lot of breweries early on made stuff out of dairy tanks. You can, with a little hard work, you can turn pretty much anything into a homebrew setup. And it's a great learning experience, and it's pretty fun. It's enjoyable to do. That's homebrewing to me and to a lot of people, and that's why it's become so prevalent, even when there's some 8,000 or something craft breweries now where you can buy pretty affordable, tasty beer in just about every style that's ever existed. So I would say go give it a shot. It doesn't take much. You can get the ingredient kits from 1 gallon kits from Brooklyn Brew Shop. I think they're around $20. Some of them might even be cheaper than that, and you can have a good weekend with it. So yeah, that's it's kind of a homebrew light episode, but I'm going to wrap this one up right here. And as always, please subscribe to the show. You get each new episode automatically downloaded. New episodes every Thursday. A new interview episode will go up next Thursday. Stay tuned for that. I will give you a hint. It is awesome. And follow the show on social media, mostly meaning Instagram, but there is also a Facebook page. I don't check that one as often, but Instagram I'll check more often, and post more often. But wherever you're listening, please leave a rating. I would greatly appreciate it. And that's it. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Wear your damn mask. Be kind to people. And till the next round, sláinte.